Okay, good afternoon. Come on, give us a DragonCon welcome. Good afternoon!
Good afternoon.
Good, that's much better, much better, much better. I'm Gitech, I'm here moderating this panel, which is Activism for Kids and Teens. Description: understanding the basic concepts and processes of democracy is helpful for youth who want to engage in support of a cause. So, you understand that? I'm Gitech. I'll let the rest of the panelists introduce themselves. Start from my left.
Sure. Hi, I'm Nash. Microphone, yay. I'm just projecting. Hey, I'm Nash. I am the grassroots advocacy organizer for Electronic Frontier Foundation. And I come to this work in a very circuitous route from doing a lot of direct action work with the Occupy movement and other spaces. And then as a result of that, building a lot of legal support systems around folks that were engaged in action and protests in order to call attention to issues that they were concerned about that were affecting their communities.
My name is Amy Stepanovich. I am U.S. Policy Manager at Access Now, which is an international human rights group. We work on tech and human rights. I come into policy. I was kind of the person who should never have gone into policy. I come from a really poor background. I grew up in Central Florida. I went to a high school with 300 kids in my graduating class. Decided to go to law school in college, so I was a late addition to law school, and still am under mountains and mountains of debt because of that decision. So happy to talk to you about the decision to go to law school and why you shouldn't make it, and decided to go to DC and work in policy, and I've been there now for a little while, working at a couple different groups, and joined Access Now about 4.5 years ago.
My name is Dr. Will Nevin. I am a visiting assistant professor of communication studies at University of Alabama at Birmingham. I am a First Amendment legal scholar and writer, and I will talk to you after Amy's done about why you should go to law school.
I'm Jonathan McFarland. I'm a law enforcement officer. I've been with a Metro Atlanta Police Department, not the Atlanta Police Department, but one in the area, for about 12 years. Last 4 years, I've worked as a special victims detective specializing in crimes against children. I am also the father of children who are activists and who go to protests with my wife. So that's my spiel.
And as for me, I've been head of the U.S. Pirate Party as well as the U.K. Pirate Party and other political parties, both in the U.S., U.K., and internationally, as well as working for some tech news sites which cover a lot of the technological protests and activism online. Okay, so where should we go to start with? Let's start with our favorite aspects of online or otherwise activism. So,
is that a question? What is my favorite?
Yeah, what's been your or not online specifically, but your favorite active activism?
Well, it really varies, and it depends on exactly what is the issue that I'm facing, and what are the tools and resources that are at the disposal of the community or the folks that I'm organizing with. So really, I guess for me, it would really be that there's not necessarily one aspect, but it's rather the entire process of being able to assess what is the place that I'm hoping to get to, or that the folks I'm hoping to get to. What does that world look like for us? And then devising, and then going from there, backing up and saying, okay, what are the strategies that we have at our disposal to be able to get there? What are the tools that we have? What are the resources? Who are our potential adversaries? What are the things that are going to stop us from being able to get there? And then once we're able to assess that and figure out, okay, is there a roadmap that helps us build our resources and build our tools and overcome that? And is part of that strategy engaging in in a symbolic action, something theatrical to call attention to the issue that we're confronting, or is it actually going directly at what we call maybe a nonviolent direct action towards the entity which is preventing that vision from being a reality, or is it using a legislative process or a more indirect process of gaining support of the existing power holders to move them toward the position that would help us to advocate for that space. So it's really that entire process that engages me, and then being able to then figure out what are the things that we're going to need to actually move toward that, the culmination of that work.
Okay, but what's your favorite one? I mean, what's your favorite, act or,
I
Occupy, is it the online SOPA?
I personally really like. I think that in this day and age, we have to embrace more of the online because it gives us a huge platform that goes beyond geographical barriers. But what's most empowering to me though is actually like being in the streets with community and watching folks feel that power and push back on things that and get past their comfort zones and move into a place that's really empowering for themselves and their community and makes that world that they want to see, that thing that they want to find, actually feel attainable.
So if possible, I'm going to answer the question the way he answered the question. I'm going to answer the question the way you want us to answer that. I will do both. because I think that the most amazing thing for me was the moment I learned two separate sides of the same coin. One is that you can have tremendous influence, and the other is that the people who you think will keep you from having influence aren't nearly as organized as you think they are. And by that I mean, like, it's really easy to think of government, and I work on government surveillance issues, so when you're looking at the NSA, CIA, like, to think they are these gigantic monstrosities who have a plan, like, very movie plot almost. Like, they have a plan, and they're moving all the pieces into place, and you're not going to matter, and they're just going to, like, make it happen. And going into D.C. and seeing just how disorganized they really are and how fast decisions get made and how, like, one of the reasons so many bad decisions get made is that they are getting made really fast and not necessarily that they're part of a giant conspiracy to do evil. They just do evil in the process frequently. And so the flip side of that is you can influence that process if you know that the ways in and figure out how to talk to the right people. It means that your voice can have a much bigger impact than you might think it can have. And that's a really amazing moment when you think, like, there's this huge U.S. government, largely considered all over the world to be the most powerful government structure that we know of, and you can change what it does, anybody in here. And so if I were to say the moment that I found, the actual movement I found most powerful, it's been in the last couple years of coming from Florida and seeing what the kids in Florida have been doing about gun control. It's not a tech-related thing, but that has been huge to see people my generation, people older than me, we have not been able to have any influence. We've not come together. We've not been able to move that ball forward. And they come out and they're like, we're just going to do it. We're just going to, like, say what we want to have happen, and we're not going to stop saying it until it actually happens. And that's been amazing. That's just been great to watch.
I'll start with a downer. From my perspective, I look at this as a constitutional issue dealing with student speech. And my biggest sort of observation in the area is that courts have consistently failed students since our landmark case in Tinker versus Des Moines. Since then, it has been a story of failure for the most part.
Why don't you quickly explain what Tinker versus Des Moines is?
Oh, sure. I forget, not everybody has read these cases. Tinker versus Des Moines is a landmark Vietnam War era case that says students have the right to free speech in public schools. It was a case that overturned discipline against students who wore black armbands to protest the war. It was a silent, peaceful protest, and the courts upheld the rights of those students to do that. Since then, we have had a continual erosion of student speech rights. And our biggest failing right now is the Supreme Court has refused on several occasions to step into the question of my high school administrator wants to police and punish my social media activities. And lower courts have enabled administrators to do that in many circumstances. The Supreme Court has had that opportunity to weigh in on that issue, and they have passed on the question. So, again, it's a downer, but I look at it very much as we have an empowering movement going on across this country right now in terms of student activism, but there are barriers to that.
My favorite kind of activism is the kind I don't have to show my face in. I'll say that, and then I'll tell you why. Okay, so I showed up for a protest of the Confederate flag in a city that's adjacent to mine, and it was shortly after the Charlottesville rally. I don't care much for Nazis, so my wife and I went. My son made a sign. He was sick. He couldn't go, so I went in his stead, and I inadvertently ended up on the front page of the local paper. And so, you know, a cop shows up in the front page of the local paper holding the sign in a protest. It, you know, maybe not the most way, best way to get promoted. So what I have found is, and when I say that, I don't want you to think that I'm not interested in activism or anything like that. I am deeply. My children are engaged. My wife is very engaged. And we have an understanding that my wife, who is a middle-aged white lady and who looks very safe, probably isn't going to get beaten by anybody when she's out there. If she gets thrown in jail, I can come bail her out. It's not going to impact our lives and our livelihood. The point being, in this day and age, we have a really diverse set of ways to be active. I can donate now to campaigns that I feel strongly about of politicians who share my values all across the country, because they're going to help shape the laws that affect me and my kids. And for those parents here, you can do some very simple things to help educate your children on how to get involved in all these different kind of platforms and find the ones that feel safe, or maybe not too safe, you know, but safe enough for you, and or within your resources. So I like the diversity of possibility that's available right now. I'm kind of with our first answer.
Okay. So okay, it is long. There we go. I forgot what my next question was going to be now. My next thing was, there's a lot of youth here. Actually, I'm surprised how many are much younger than I was expecting was going to be. I thought it was going to be mainly teens than the youth side. But activism can be for all ages, and some of the more powerful images can be when the youths, you know, take part, the youngsters. So what do you all think are the most effective ways for teenagers and those younger, say, 8 or 9, to take part in any kind of protest? I'll stop. Let's end this time.
Yeah, so I've got 3 kids. They're 17, 12, and 9. The 17-year-old's been, was it a sit-in at a school, has been in the city of Atlanta to be a part of the March for Our Lives, has gone with my wife to several others. I think having children go to events that are very likely to be safe, and Atlanta is great for that. The Atlanta Police Department does overall an amazing job of not escalating. They don't use an inappropriate level of force. Their uniforms are appropriate. They are, I think, a role model for the country. And so I think children, when it's safe for them to come and be physically present and be uncomfortable and be out in the heat for a little while and be holding up a sign and their arms get tired, I think that's valuable, because I think experiencing a little bit of discomfort for a cause makes it kind of seep into your bones a little bit. But other than that, I think having ongoing conversations with your kids and encouraging them to be part of social media groups that are kind of in line with your values and are part of those movements, whether it's like the March for Our Lives, Parkland groups. I think curating those, helping your kids curate those, is really valuable.
I think my biggest tip would be to, as much as possible, divorce your activism from the school setting. Now, that can be trouble when your activism is pointedly at school, right? But I view sort of my position as making your life as uncomplicated as possible. And once your principal sees, you know, your Facebook post and calls you into the office, that just makes your life more complicated. Is it contrary to the principles of the First Amendment and, you know, a free citizenry and a democracy? Yes, it is. But unfortunately, again, the courts have failed us in many instances. So don't organize at school. Don't organize on social media. Find other community centers to do your organizing. And then again, just try to keep that as divorced as possible from the school setting.
I'll speak specifically about DC, as the only person up here actually from Washington, DC, and who does that level of work on a daily basis, because it's a really interesting area to get involved in if you want to influence policy at the federal, international level, because it's really boring, guys. It's really incredibly, horribly boring. But it's also really easy to get involved, and not enough people who are not advocacy groups or special interests or lobbyists actually get involved in that level. And so the funny thing is that we've made government officials, particularly under President Obama, have been trying to make it easier for people to weigh in on the federal level. There are online forums where you can submit comments to federal agencies. It's now easier and getting even easier to submit amicus briefs to Supreme Court cases. I would personally love nothing more than to see a bunch of students submit a joint, in their own name, submit a joint brief to the Supreme Court on an issue that they care about. And there are a lot of them that are going to be in front of the Supreme Court in the next few years. If you just look at the headlines of the news, the Supreme Court is definitely going to be busy, and there are only going to be probably not enough justices to have a majority opinion because we're one short right now. So it's a matter of overcoming, I think, the boringness, I would say. My advice is, like, get a little bit past the fact that it's writing a letter, or it's putting arguments down in bullet points, and realizing that those bullet points can actually change the way a body does its business, and knowing that it's our job as people who are in DC right now to continue to insist that that process gets easier. The fact that you need to be a media organization to submit a Freedom of Information Act request and get the fees waived in the United States isn't really acceptable. People from all different backgrounds, all different professions, should not have to pay exorbitant fees if they want to find out what's going on in the federal government. They should be able to ask for documents and get those documents for free. You should not have to read 200 pages of administrative policy that doesn't make any sense in order to submit comments on that policy. You should be able to say, here are the things that I want you to weigh in on, and get a response to that without having to know necessarily every single nuance of the policy that they're proposing. So getting the documents shorter, getting the fees waived faster, these are institutional things that have to change, but the processes are easy. And so my advice is to seek them out more and to get more involved, because your age doesn't matter when you're writing a letter. Nobody asks you what your age is when you're submitting comments to the federal government. All they care about is what you're saying. And so it's a way to divorce yourself from something that you think might get people to take you less seriously. And you're the same as any adult in that circumstance, in that forum.
So I'm just going to build off a little bit of what some of the other folks have said already, which, for instance, So one of the things that I learned pretty early on is that, like, when you're yelling in the streets, a lot of times it's a good way to get attention, but it's not always the most inviting to bring other people into the space that you're there. And so one of the things that we did, which was a lot of fun, was we took some bikes that we had and put huge speakers on the back, like these speaker trailers on the back, and we rode around New York City and just had a party in the street. And people that would have never come into when we were having a march were like, what are you guys doing? And it created an opportunity for us to engage and inform people around the issue that we were doing in a way that was really welcoming and engaging. And so one of the things that I like to do now, and I think that's a really great opportunity for young folks to engage around, is like doing like a party or a rally or a movie screening or something that's going to allow you to welcome folks into a space and share information and inform them about it. And then to add on to what Amy said, is like that's also a great opportunity to then write, and maybe at that space you have an opportunity for folks to sign on to a letter to the local representative, right? And so then it's showing not only are you then like having your individual viewpoint, and maybe they're writing individual letters as well, not having your individual viewpoint conveyed to the representative on whatever level, whether it be local or state, city, town, but also showing that it's not just one individual, it's not just a large number of single individuals. There's actually a collective body that's happening, right? There's a group of constituents that are sharing this this and organizing, which is going to be viewed in a different way. So having a party or having an event that's really welcoming of people and is fun and a place to engage in where you can share and inform people in your community around the issue, and then also walking out of that with a way of making it really evident that people that they're there to represent are organizing in a specific way and for a specific mission is a great way to advance that is one example of a great way to advance that mission.
Okay, we had a question over here in the blue, so if you just...
That's amazing.
Thank you. So my question was actually a follow-up for Amy. I like the idea of getting the kids involved by sending letters, but I think why it's daunting is they don't know if there's certain, like, they don't really teach how to write a letter in school anymore. So, like, is there a resource of sample letters or a template, a format that kids can follow to make it a little less scary to write those sort of briefs? And then the flip side of that is, I know your point of you can't read 200 pages of policy that make no sense. Is there a place where you can go that has the Cliff Notes version of policies that kids could access that might make them understand better so they know how to then apply that information and, you know, make their decision of what they want to say and then put that then into the template?
Sure.
Does that exist anywhere?
So there are a couple different pieces here. So, for example, one thing is there's a law. I will get as little wonky as I can, I absolutely promise. There's a law called the Administrative Procedure Act that everybody in D.C. calls the APA because we love acronyms, because if anything D.C. likes, it's keeping other people out of D.C. So we call it the APA, and it says that before any government agency, and if you guys know government agencies, there are 50 zillion of them, takes any action that impacts individual rights, they have to ask for comments from the public on that action. They have to do it. And then they have to consider those comments before they make a final decision about what they're going to do. So they can propose something, and then they have to ask you about feedback, and then they have to take that into consideration before they issue a final decision. All of that gets published in what's called the Federal Register, and that's where you find those like 20-page documents of this is what we want to do. Some, like our group, EFF, a lot of groups do try to provide summaries of that. One of the things we did recently, Customs and Border Protection wanted to require people to provide their social media usernames and potentially passwords when they came into the country on certain forms. And so what we did was we put forth a questionnaire, like actual multiple choice questions and spaces for people to leave answers to say, fill this out and we'll submit it for you. You don't even have to go in and like put in whatever you want to put in, answer however you want. We don't care if it matches our opinions. We'll make it really easy and we'll submit it for it. So there are groups trying to make that even easier than it is. But if you go in and it's a comment box on the website, and you don't even have to type in a letter necessarily. You can just put like a few sentences or bullet points.
And that's on the Register website?
On the Federal Register. And
so
they'll
submit
that.
If we just Google Federal Register, then we should find it.
And I can give resources. We actually have a blog post that I can share with people who are interested that we published back at the beginning of 2017. And it has a long section specifically about the APA and how to submit comments and how to make it easier for people.
Okay.
It's never going to... We can only make it so easy.
No, I get that,
but it's...
I think a lot of people just don't know where to start, and that's, I think, the first thing.
You would be amazed at how many comments from adults are like, half a page, no punctuation, no capitalization, just like, here's some things that I think about, and they have to take that seriously. If you can put sentences together, and I imagine every kid in this audience can put sentences together better than that, you are leagues ahead of some of the things that they get.
But it's that knowing where to send that sentence
exactly,
put together.
Exactly.
We'll actually cover a fair bit of the Administrative Procedures Act and commenting on stuff in the next panel, which will be on net neutrality, which became famous for its comments. So,
as a follow-on to that, you mentioned that they have to consider the comments. What does that verb mean in that case? Because related to the next column,
guys,
which we don't have to...
Yeah, sorry. Science track is trying to take over the world again.
Very fast.
Talking about making new stars. So they, like, is it, what is, does that have any real onus, or is it just we have technically had an intern read these and they happen to be sitting next to a trash can?
They're supposed to be, they're supposed to respond. A lot of times they'll be like, a lot of people said something generally in this camp. We think this is a bad idea because X. Now, in the net neutrality sense, and stick around with it, the fact that hundreds of thousands of people said the same thing actually ended up becoming very strong evidence.
Well, again, we'll get into further details and exactly those comments in the next panel. So we,
that can help.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that is not to spot. They can still kind of write it off, but they have to. They're supposed to issue a response to those, exactly, and that can provide foundations for litigation for lawyers in the future. Whatever they say back, so just making the argument can help.
And keeping in mind that the on the other side, the for instance, the net neutrality, the incumbent ISPs, the service providers that are controlling, that have monopolies over those markets, are going to be pushing very, very hard, and having the ability to show that this many constituents are having this response and are holding this position is going to be the political cover that those politicians are need to be able to push back on that, on those pushes from.
I think the Red Ranger had a question.
Which Red Ranger?
So, Nash, you brought up the inviting people in and being more welcoming into it. So I guess my question is just based off that, where, you know, there's sometimes where people, especially when they're younger, can take things very personally, when it's really just a matter of difference in opinion. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned just being as forthcoming and trying to say, like, this is where I'm coming from, and trying to make it as inviting as possible. What advice would you give to somebody, or I guess the whole panel, who's trying to teach that to, you know, young advocates, to not take it personally, to understand that this is a matter of opinion, not someone trying to, like, you know, take your family out?
Well, the first advice would be to model that. Because unfortunately, it's not just young folks that have those positions and have difficulty, like, being open and not just having like confirmation bias and only listening to things that match with what they already believe. So modeling the fact that you can hear other people's opinions and take them in and reflect that you've actually actively heard that and be able to engage in a reasonable conversation that reflects that just because someone starts thinking isn't just like you, then that it's wrong, and that whatever political beliefs you hold and you didn't always have them, and it was a process to which you developed them, right? And so just understanding that and modeling that, and just creating this space for a conversation and not cutting conversation off, and just continuing to have dialogue and show a level of respect for folks that have a different opinion of you.
And just real quick, kind of a flip side of that is also understanding why people take things really seriously. I will never be able to internalize to the same extent immigration policy as someone whose family's been impacted by that. I don't have the background. It doesn't personally impact me in the same way, or hasn't any of my family in a really long time. And so when somebody says something, like when somebody is very much internalizing something somebody said on immigration, I defer to that to an extent because I can't have that position. And so you have to, I think you have to be respectful to the extent you can both ways. But understanding where people are coming from becomes really important, even when they're even seeing very personal.
Yeah, and being able to realize that from whatever the cause and factor may be, when you see that, being aware of people's physical, like body language and other things, and when you see that conversation has shut down, respectively removing yourself from that space and reflecting on what your engagement was in that space. And you know, so like being really self-reflective on the way that you engage in those conversations and aware that there's probably things that are not visible to you that people are bringing to those engagements based off of their history and past, and just being compassionate in the way that you engage with that.
I have just one more thing I wanted to add. I think in many instances, Rocky, if I can call you Rocky.
Oh, boy.
You want to try to channel people in ways that their energies, their expertise, their passion can be used most effectively. I work with a student group at Alabama. It's got a little, you know, democratic hierarchy. And the vice president, the secretary, and everybody else aside from the president, they come to me and say, the president we have is not great at talking to administrators, he's not great at recruitment, but he's got a lot of energy. So we just need to kind of aim him in the right direction. So I think when we come across the kind of roadblocks that you were talking about, those moments for disappointment, it is, you know, the old when one door closes, another one opens, right? So we want to push people towards something that they're going to be energetic about, passionate about, and make sure that you don't lose them, because everybody has value and everybody has something to contribute. It's a lot of times, I think, just finding the right spots to put people.
Okay, you have anything to add on that, Jonathan? No?
I mean, I can tell you from just personal experience, not so much on like a in D.C. or from like a classroom perspective or sort of an organizational perspective. I eat dinner every night with a group of law enforcement professionals who are way far to the right of me. We disagree about a lot of things politically, but a lot of our conversations, when we do have disagreements and I'm trying to express myself to them, one, I know them, and I treat them kindly because I know who they are, I know their names, I know about their families. And so if you can put yourself into spaces with people who are different than you and engage in them sort of a little bit more deeply than a Facebook thread, that's helpful if you're able to. But secondly, I try to frame things in shared experience. So when we're having a conversation about, you know, appropriate level of involvement for government in a particular thing, I can start referencing back to, hey, you're a government employee, and here's what the expectation is you have about your own job and your own field, and then move it over into whatever conversation we're having. And so I think when it comes to being respectful, I think being mindful of your context and being respectful of how people are going to receive it is useful, and just for the utility of communication, that's really important.
Yeah, I noticed again we got quite a few people under 18 here, so if any of those got any questions specifically? No? Anyone?
You're not under 18. Get yourself together, Tom.
Rocky's got it.
Rocky's got the box.
She's being shy.
We don't need to be shy.
So I'm asking for her, but she would like to know, because this is a panel for teens and kids, at what age did all of you become activists? And what was the issue that inspired you to become an activist?
For me, I grew up in a city many of you have heard of called Liverpool in the UK. And for me, in the early 80s, it was Thatcher and Liverpool, especially where I grew up, was very high poverty. It was actually the second highest area of poverty in the European Union after rural Sicily. It was that bad, and there was a lot of riots and poll tax riots and things like that. And that impacted me specifically. The incident that springs to mind was in my the main road I lived near had a four-way junction right by my school and the library, and it had a set of traffic lights. And they took that out. And then there was no way for the kids to cross the road to get to the school, because it was what you call an elementary school. So we had no way to cross safely this very busy four-lane road to get there. So the local mothers got together and they started a crossing line, and they filled it. They would just walk across and then walk back, and they would go in a complete circle. They blocked. They had the entire road blocked for about 10 hours, and they did that for 2 weeks. So this major road between the two main roads into the city center were completely blocked for 2 weeks, and they got themselves a crossing signal instead. And they got that put there. And then what really hit it home to me was that school had an old-fashioned policy. All boys had to wear shorts until they were in fifth grade. You could wear long trousers, but otherwise it had to be shorts. And my mother got really upset with that, because, you know, in the winter you still had to wear shorts all the time through. And winters in Liverpool get really cold, and my mother started a protest at the school, and she ended up getting our whole policy for the school overturned just by being persistent, attacking, you know, getting to the people, being there. And that's what started for me. So that was, you know, that late mid and late 80s. So.
So you were about fifth grade, age wise.
Yeah, I was okay. Fifth when that that's actually okay. Happened. So yeah, in 1990. So yeah.
In ninth grade, I wrote a letter to the editor, our local daily newspaper, about a constitutional amendment regarding flag burning. Thankfully, no one listened to me.
I was super complacent. I definitely didn't get involved as a kid. I remember I read Martin Luther King's letters from Birmingham jail. When I was in high school, it had a super profound impact on me, but I didn't do anything politically. As a police officer, I started to think more, and when I was training recruits for a few years, and I always used to tell them that one of my personal goals was never to be in a picture sticking a dog on anybody or turning a hose on anybody, never to sort of let that into me, never be capable of that. But then in the past few years, kind of seeing it got blatant enough that somebody in my position, as safe as I am, kind of had to face it, and that's what got me more into it, especially with its impact on my kids.
So interestingly, for me, when I was 16, I took a job as an office assistant for a healthcare association and ended up working in the government relations department. And doing a lot of political fundraisers and dinners for candidates and things. And it was kind of, for me, it was kind of like the deal, like, you never want to see them make the sausage. And so it's probably why, like, I then, like, after several years of doing that as through high school into most of college, I stayed in that position, moved up, but, like, stayed basically there. That, like, then I didn't engage around politics again for probably 10 years after that, and then when I did, it was, like, from being in the streets, like, because I was like, there's got to be a different way to do this, and then, you know, then developed a deeper analysis over time as well. But yeah, my first was like, straight into, like, watching how the finance side happened and being like,
As my earlier comments indicate, I didn't know you could do anything when I was a kid, and I grew up with a single mom. She worked all the time, and didn't teach me that. And we've had a lot of conversations in my adult life where she, like, fully expected to do that and just didn't have time. So in high school, the closest I have is I wanted to be a journalist in high school, and 9/11 happened when I was when I was in high school, and I ended up on my own having I was the editor-in-chief of the school newspaper, and I put out an entirely separate version of it, trying to bring in different feelings that the students were having in response to the attacks, which ended up being very politically charged, created a lot of problems with the faculty at my school.
God bless Hazelwood.
And so we ended up having to fight to make sure that could be published and that the students could read it and we could make some of the statements that we were making. That's really the only thing that I know that I got involved with early, but a lot of my activities came later. And I think it's interesting to know, like, you can get involved when you're in fifth grade, or you can get involved when you're in college. And it, like, you can have the same impact. You don't have to start early, but you can start really early. And I think knowing both of those things is important.
And not only does it, and it's also important to remember as well, not everything's got to be a national issue. Some of the things can be a really local issue, mm-hmm. really important to yourself. Yep. And that can just be the stepping stone and give you the confidence to get to the arm of the Congress. Yep. and the fundraising and everything else, but, you know, tiny acorns and all that.
I just wanted to hold this. No. So there has been one topic that has really, really pushed activism in the last couple of years. So I'm going to direct this toward you. I'm a mom of a 5'10". You know, I mean, he's 13. He's 5'10".
He's a good Lando.
Right. Thank you.
And
thank
I've never
you.
Guessed 13.
No, exactly. Which is the issue.
Yeah.
You know, as we continue to have these conversations, as a matter of fact, the first time he wore this Lando, it was like, make sure you keep your gun up under your, you know, your laser gun up under your cape. And, you know, he hasn't had any negative experiences yet, I don't think. I've seen things throughout college. I haven't had any negative experiences personally. I've seen friends who have. What is the missing piece in the activism? Because I feel like it's just extreme with regards to police and with black males. What's the missing piece? Because it seems like we're kind of going around in circles where there's like one side that's like thinks that all cops are bad, and then there's the other side that's like, no, it's a hard job. And I think the most of us are in the middle where we understand it's a difficult situation. What's the missing piece as to furthering this, taking it out of conversation into this is how we as a community solve this problem? Putting it all on you,
yeah.
Sir. Right? Put it all on you.
So
right?
I'll try to organize my thoughts because I have a lot. So I'll start with this. We'll go sideways. I'll come back around. I'm certified as an instructor in the state of Georgia for law enforcement facilities. That sounds maybe fancy. It's like a 3-week class. It's not that big a deal. But part of that course, it is challenging. You have to develop a curriculum. The first day that we were in there, we had to say what we wanted to develop. And I said, I want to develop a curriculum about cognitive bias and faulty reasoning for law enforcement. And they looked at me and were like, okay. So the reason I'm telling you that is I did a lot of my own research into the idea of implicit bias, into things like confirmation bias, and I developed this little curriculum about it, and I taught it to this group of other law enforcement officers and supervisors who were in the class with me learning how to be instructors, and they were really completely unaware of this stuff. And I learned a lot just putting the class together. And I think that one of the biggest blockades when it comes to discussing issues of race and the impact of power, systemic power, law enforcement power over populations, is that there isn't a very good understanding of how race and racism can exist without someone individually being a horrific person. You can enter into a situation and be making decisions without a conscious appreciation of all of the internal forces leading you to that decision. And the only solution that I have encountered personally, both as an individual having to make use of force decisions as a road officer, but also as a trainer and as a father, is you have to inoculate yourself to it by getting educated. So I don't have any grand solutions about how to have better conversations, but I will say that the more we are able to educate ourselves and one another about the fact that you can be part of a bad system and you can do bad things without being a bad person. But then once you realize that, the onus is on you to fix it. And my personal philosophy is the more power a person has, the more responsibility they have to fix their own crap.
If I could add potentially some homework, how many of you who are under 18 read science fiction or fantasy novels? No? So that's what I read when I was on. That's what I still read. That's all I read. That's my reading list. Recently, a couple years ago, I picked up a nonfiction book, which is really rare for me, called The Rise of the Warrior Cop. And it's the entire history of policing in the United States. And I found it fascinating just to say, how did the police forces across the country get to where they are today? The education of that process was so incredibly enlightening to me, especially coming from my sister was married to a cop for a really long time, and he was part of a SWAT force. We had a SWAT force where I grew up. Again, 300 kids in my graduating class, entire county, by the way, not just a city. Like, that was my entire county. And we had a SWAT team. And learning why that was a thing and learning why police approach their jobs the way they do was really important for me to know. And so if you're interested in that, and like, education can be power, I would recommend that book. And it's interesting. The Rise of the Warrior Cop, it's by Radley Balco.
It's a very good book.
It's really, and it's interesting. It's not dry nonfiction. It's actually like, it will make you want to read more.
I mean, when I came to the States 15 years ago, I was shocked by the militarization thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, and to give you context of where I grew up and stuff, my first trip to the States, I went to L.A. to film a show called BattleBots. And on the way back, I got lost going to the airport. I was going from Long Beach to L.A., and I got lost in Compton. I'm I'm 19. I'm 120 pounds, so half my present weight. I'm carrying two suitcases and wandering around Compton. Compton looked better than where I grew up. That should give you some context, but the militarization, the police, and that encountered in Long Beach and in L.A. later and everything was massively overpowered. It was all about the aggression and stuff. The dominating control rather than the policing by consent that I'd been used to growing up. I mean, we still had groups like the SWAT team in Liverpool and stuff, the TSG, the Tactical Support Group stuff, but they were very kept for very select purposes. And even now, there's very few guns in Britain, even in the police. I think Merseyside Police had 700 firearms actions where the firearms teams were sent out over an entire year. That's a 4 million people policed 1 year, 700 times the armed police were sent out, and that's for any weapons call at all. And that
yeah, right, exactly.
The county I live in now, 700 is less than a thing, and there's less than 30,000 people in that county. So that tells you something right there and then.
I will say there has been, and I can't speak for this on a large scale, but I can tell you at least here in sort of my neck of the woods, which is about 15, 20 miles from the city proper, but also in this region, and I hope in the nation, there's been a bit of a shift from the paradigm of warrior to that of guardian, and there's definitely some pushback against it from some sectors of the profession, but there are some people at kind of high levels. My department's chief is kind of big on it, of transitioning to that, and I think if he cultivates community engagement, and I think for those people who feel comfortable doing that, like finding ways to get engaged with like chief of police when they're doing those sorts of community events and whatnot, and trying to find allies within law enforcement who believe in that kind of guardian model of, the first responsibility is the protection of the citizenry, upholding people's rights. I mean, I took an oath to defend the Constitution, so I think that's really important. And there are folks who feel the same way. So I think the more support that those people in the profession get from the community, the more empowered they're going to feel to speak out about it and to try to influence their departments.
And that transitioned into another point, which is to make sure that your protest has its message about what it's trying to accomplish and not, because the protest about that leads to one of the most controversial and well-documented things right now, the kneeling for the flag and stuff, which has become a national conversation. The president's tweeted in on it countless times, and you can't get much more high profile than that in the States. And to many people, the question of what that protest is about has become muddled because it isn't always expressed as clearly as it likes as to what the message behind the protest is, no matter how simple.
I would say Colin's done a pretty good job of that.
It's
been obscured by other people, but he's done a very clear job of saying.
I say you've got to make sure that everybody keeps repeating
continuing your messaging, make your messaging clear and accessible. Yeah.
And don't let it be twisted like that.
Yeah.
So, any more questions?
It feels to me like a lot of people, have causes that they care about but are not in a position to devote their professional life to it. And so I'm curious from each of you, what do you feel is sort of the densest thing one can do in sort of part-time activism, the one thing that will affect the most change? Is it writing a letter? Is it donating to a campaign? Is it attending, say, a single protest in a year? What do each of you feel is the one act a workaday person can do towards their own activist goals?
Educate, inform, make sure that people around you are informed. Because it's the foundation from which you're going to be able to decide what are the other opportunities that you have at your disposal, making sure that people have the information.
I mean, this is half an answer, but get involved locally somewhere. Local politics is, you can have the most impact, and it's so incredibly important. We see now things that were happening in California are now happening at the state level in California and are now changing the federal conversation. And that all happened by people who were like, we're going to change what our city council does. And that's a more accomplishable part-time way to get them. Most city councils are part-time. They don't do it for their full-time job. So if you want to weigh in with what they're doing, you can do it pretty quickly.
How many people actually know who their state representatives are? How many of you have actually spoken to them about anything? You got contacted them?
Rocky's on the ball. Good. Good. I would say that if you don't have a lot of time or if you have some constraints, I think one of the most important things can be simply taking care of yourself, not losing hope, not drowning in despair. I know after Charlottesville, you know, Tina Fey goes on SNL and does this, the sheet cake bit, right? Her message did not come off the way she intended, but I think her point is you can find yourself in some very dark times, and you have to look for some kind of daylight through that. And if you are, you know, basically, in essence, broken, you're of no good to anybody. So take care of yourself first if you have nothing else, if you can do nothing else.
I'm going to answer a slightly different question than what you asked, but it's relevant. As a parent, the most important thing that I think you can do to foster this with your kids, and we do this with our teen, is find a candidate who your child feels strongly about their messages. Not necessarily you, but ask them what's important to them. Find a candidate, a local candidate, and take them out, and they're going to volunteer for at least a day. Go knock on doors. It does a couple of things. One, they get involved in a political campaign. They've contributed to something that means something to them, and they've also knocked on a door and had to look at a stranger and have an interaction and realize that, you know, if it goes well or if it goes bad, they're going to live to see another day, which is hugely important for kids to learn how to do. But pick a candidate, go give up your Saturday, go volunteer, make sure your kid's there with you. I think that would be the single most important thing.
Of course, there's also the thing, it's, I'm not sure if it's got an official name, it's sort of the hierarchy of interaction. So with a lot of elected officials, especially, it's, you know, things like an email is almost nothing, a signature on a petition is considered worthless.
Not always.
Well, generally, I mean, but in comparison to the rest, you know, a letter, a form letter, a handwritten letter gets more ranked, it's a phone call gets a better response. It's seen more as a power, you know, as they take it more seriously because you've taken the more time and effort to take part.
Yeah. So. Set up visits when they're in the district. In addition to the letters, another thing, you were talking about the hierarchy of how things are going to be viewed, what is the time engagement that you're doing. When your representative, or maybe if it's a local representative, they're pretty there and accessible, right? If you want to set up a meeting, if it's a federal or state level, like when they're home in the district on break, setting up meetings to go and see them and share your positions, and if it's other people in your community that you can bring with you, that's a highly effective way of showing them the engagement and the importance within the community and people that they represent.
Earlier on, you both mentioned law school, and I'm 16. I've obviously started looking at colleges, I started thinking about my profession, and sometimes one of the ways a lot of people think of the only way I can get involved in activism and politics is to go straight to law school, mm-hmm. And you were talking about the cons of it, and you talked about the pros of it, and I was wondering if you could elaborate more on that.
We only got a couple of minutes, so make it quick.
30. I'll try to do 30 seconds.
Okay. Let me time you.
If you want to litigate, if you want to be in court, if you want to do things that a lawyer does traditionally, law school is the only way to go. If you want to do policy, if you want to do government, there can be cheaper ways to do that. And I'm happy to talk you through that. And right now, this administration, there used to be a program where if you went into government or public service, you could get your massive numbers of law school student loans forgiven. This administration's very hostile to that policy and probably going to get rid of it. So know that when you come out of law school, you're going to have to pay that back. And that can be, that can hinder your career. So if you don't want to do law things, which are very valuable, just consider the fact that there are other options that are open to you.
I absolutely agree. Go into it with open eyes, but it can be a wonderful education into how our various systems work and just training your mind. You hear so often, think like a lawyer. Well, it just teaches analytical reasoning and how to see different sides of things than you might not otherwise see.
Any more questions, anybody? We've got one back there with the yellow hat. He's been trying to go ever since we found out he wasn't 18. He was over 18.
I just kind of wanted to maybe ask about, or maybe just get your thoughts on, you know, what maybe types of activism should kids maybe get involved in at a young age. I definitely see the value of getting involved at a young age, getting exposure to it. But at some point, you know, some issues can be, you know, are very complicated. And, you know, of course, you know, kids are all learning, you know, everyone grows and you learn, you come up, you know, your own opinions on things. But, you know, especially, like, you know, the complicated topics where you have to kind of research these issues a lot of times. And, you know, especially when, like, you know, it's complicated issues, I'll see, like, you know, maybe younger groups of people talking about them. And, you know, every person who's young is going to deal with, like, oh, he's young, like, you know, it's going to write him off. He's too, you know, he's too young to talk about it, things like that. So, you know, is there maybe, like, restrictions to what kinds of activism you should get involved in, and to maybe, like, where their voice would actually kind of make an impact, and not like, oh, this is such a very complicated topic, you know, you can't really, you know, talk about it, or maybe, you know, like, they'll have kids speak out about things, and all the time they're thinking, you know, is there someone else maybe, like, telling them what to say, kind of things, because, you know, this is very complicated issues, especially, I'm from, like, South Florida, so, sorry, this is kind of long, but mainly, it's kind of, like, what kind of activism could, you know, kids start with that would have the most impact for them?
I mean, I would say the issues that you feel most directly affect you, right? So that might be something that pertains sort of specifically to your school, right? Or something that pertains specifically to your town, and like that you and the people around you feel passionate about. And I'm very hesitant. I know, like, I might be on a different space than some of the other panelists here. I'm very hesitant to say, like, this is what you should do, don't do that, right? My thing is, my position is more like, get informed, find out, like, what are the things that you could do, what are the potential consequences of the things that you could do, right? And then making informed choices, and obviously if you're under 18, making informed choices that are informed by also conversations with your guardian and the people that take care of you and care for you and that you care for as well. So because obviously the decisions that you make, the actions that you take are going to affect everyone around you as well. And so so things that, like, are actually, that you actually feel passionate and engaged about. There are a lot of great resources and tools for if you are someone who's a little bit older along the spectrum, and there's other folks that are younger than you that you want to engage those conversations with. There are some great tools and resources that you can find for age appropriate conversations with folks that are younger than you. But as far as, like, as individuals that are youth and young folks that are trying to engage, if there's something that feels really passionate, that you're passionate about, and other people that you're around or feel passionate about, and you can gain that support, try and find out all of the information, find resources in your community that can support you in getting the information that you'll need to know what the consequences of your actions might be and what the positive effects of your actions might be, so that you can, with the people around you, gauge what action you want to take with that information, making informed choices.
The activism toolbox doesn't vary greatly from issue to issue. Find something you're passionate about, learn how to engage in it, and if you become passionate about something else later, you're going to be able to use the same things that you learned, the same. That said, I'm really passionate about privacy and security, digital security. It's going to impact all of you if it hasn't already. Happy to talk you through those issues if you want to come over to the EFF and Access Now booths and about why they're important.
Don't listen to the voice in your head that says you're not good enough, that you're not smart enough, that you don't know what you're doing. Guess what? None of us know what we're doing. So do not fall victim to imposter syndrome. Your opinion is just as valid as anyone else's.
If you're talking with younger kids about political issues, not necessarily about specific forms of activism, but the issues themselves, you talked about them being complicated. My wife and I treat them like human reproduction. Everything's age appropriate, but we're honest. We don't misinform, but we don't give them so much that it infringes on their innocence. That can be difficult to do, but as they get older, they get more shades of gray, they get more sides of the issue, and we treat them with the respect that they're going to be able to understand it and form their own opinions about it. So if you're talking with younger people about these issues, don't overwhelm them, but be respectful of their intelligence and of their ability to handle it.
And at the same time, I mean, my kids are a little older now, they're teenagers and that, but if you can explain the issues to the kid, then that generally means that you start understanding the issues better and see both sides of it and can often work better on how to address it. So figure out you know, how to explain it to them. That'll help explain it to yourself and have best approach. So unfortunately, I think that's all the time we've got. That's all we've got time for now. It's now 3:31, so I'd like to... Yeah, rate us and hit like for more content.
And thank you all for coming.
Yes, thank you.
So this is the first... I think this is the first time we've actually done something kid-friendly. So, yeah, rate us in the app and let us know how it goes and whether you like this. Is everybody thumbs up on this? All right, cool.